It was like a desert, but the air was never warmer than about 20. Each grain of sand was like a tiny crystal of silver. The sky was deep indigo during the day, almost black with a lavender sun overhead. At night, the sky was black, but with few stars. I was staying with a political leader, David Gavriel, and his family, his son David and his daughter Rose. The dwelling place was a crystalline pyramid at 19.5 degrees north.
Thank you, Plum and Plumber.
The pyramid was royal blue and constantly illuminated by the glowing white column in the central room, a pillar made from a valuable marble white stone from a planet in a nearby solar system. There was, in the dream, a similar column in the center of the dwelling place of every planet's leader. No one told me these details. I just knew them. You know how dreams are. David had blue skin like his father's. Rose had a light lavender skin, almost pink, much like their son. This was apparently rare, as neither of her parents had pink skin. What's it like at home? The younger David once asked me.
Pretty diverse, or so we like to think. Everybody is pretty caught up in their opinions, and they let them act as barriers between each other.
David pondered this response.
Really? I had understood from reading about the Earth that the people were warlike and greed-motivated. Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to think we're growing out of that. Maybe it's that the urge to kill is inherent in their emphatic urge to fight for some cause, enforcing their opinions, you see, out of a latent awareness of their unrealities. David nodded in agreement.
You still use money, don't you?
Yeah, the undead still reign supreme on Earth, David chuckled.
The undead?
The collective purses with the rights of beings. They don't exist, yet people die for them, and no one is to blame. It's a bad program. Solomon predicted it.
Interesting. David was a nice guy. He and I would stay up late having extensive, multi-track conversations. The sunrise would always surprise me. I never did get used to their days, equivalent to 17 of ours, which they divided into 9 units of 81 lesser divisions, making it even more confusing.
Oh, what would you say? What would you say, babe? About coming with me for the rest of the day? I just know, I just know, then we can make it all done with all of our time. You and me, babe, all of the time. Taking our dove in the sweet sunshine. Oh, wouldn't you say it's a beautiful day, baby? Wouldn't you say it's a beautiful day? So out of our time, thinking about all the beautiful times, loving divine. Oh, wouldn't you say that it's a beautiful day? Please lift on you. That you take me through the promised land, baby. What you do while when the darkness is settling in? Oh, don't you spread it on like a disease. Don't bring it on with all the ease. I wanna make it all better. Won't you take my smile and make it bigger? Oh, baby. It's a beautiful day, little darling, oh baby.
Thank you, Korak Lumina.
For one of their months, a boy named Tyriel stayed with us. He was from Hercury, the planet closest to their sun. He didn't speak English as well as the Gavriels, but the three of us still managed to have endless conversations. "Where did your language come from?" Tyri once asked me. "Well, it's complicated. The ancient terrestrial languages, Latin and that of the Germanics and the original language of these islands, all kind of jumbled together over a period of centuries through war and created English, which evolved into what I'm speaking now." "That's really weird," Tyri replied. "Not really. All languages have a similar background." "Not all languages. Maybe all languages on your planet." "Well then," I replied, "where did Hercules come from?" Tyri explained. "The four nucleic acids are ascribed to the four points of an equal-armed cross, purines bottom and left, pyrimidines top and right. The top, of course, never leaves the nucleus. Then, however many permutations of four derive each of the 20 letters of nature, are placed together in such a way that, even scribbled, you can distinguish each permutation individually. Then our words echo the amino acid chains, and we speak very quickly. You'd be surprised how many words are already written in us. There's really no need to," Tyri chuckled, "make them up." "This way, when an infant learns how to speak and write, he is also learning the very language of creation, and each and every nuance, however subtle, of cellular life, both simple and complex. So every conversation that has yet taken place biochemically in a test tube, or in a man's body, or through spoken word, lays the foundation, at any given instant, for the rest of the unfolding of creation. That way it's pretty easy to predict the future." I stared at him. "What the hell are you talking about?" "Okay, take for example, on the human number 7 chromosome, there's a 480-letter DNA word, which you would call tryptophan decarboxylase, among other names. It catalyzes several decarboxylation reactions. In other words, it separates the carbon dioxide from certain molecules, turning them into other molecules. It's the reason why you have the neurotransmitters serotonin, tryptamine, dimethyltryptamine, melatonin. We call it Tyri continued, "It would work on any planet, even Earth, if their nursery school taught them in the natural language instead of the meaningless ABCs. Their thoughts would be written in the same language as their DNA. Then by the time they were 10 years old, their knowledge of what you call medicine would be far more vast than any doctor your planet has ever produced. Tell me, Charles, what is the worst disease on your planet today? What does it do?"
"Well, HIV is pretty bad. That one goes into T cells, the immune system, stays dormant until it's reproduced quite a bit, then attacks. It mutates often and is most concentrated in blood and semen." Tyri spoke a word with so many sounds in such a short period of time, I was amazed. He went on in English, "Yes, I can see it. Probably generated artificially. Your planet hasn't been around long enough for that one to happen on its own." Tyri pulled out a pen and paper, scribbled illegible tiny letters across half of one side, and said, "Send this to your home planet, and don't you worry about giving me currency. I'm not a doctor," Tyri winked. So, I sent it back to the Earth. They got a kick out of it. Apparently it was a flawless cure for all strains of the virus, with no side effects.
Thank you, Mount Sims.
About a year later, David Sr. held a meeting. It lasted one of their 9-day weeks. Representative from most of the known planets were there. It was tense, and some of the families didn't get along so well. The blue people liked the red people, but not Tiri's people, and Tiri's people didn't seem to get along with the people from Mel's home planet, Aphnes.
So you met Tiri? Mel asked me one day.
Yes, he helped me save the lives of millions of people on my planet.
Course he did, candy ass. Did he lecture you about your language, too?
You know him?
Not personally, but he's a fucking Hercurian.
So?
Oh, I forgot, you're from Earth, sitting up straight, too civilized to notice your own fascist social armory, he mumbled. You don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. Just put on eloquent airs and pretend to love and accept, and even understand every perverse type of friggin' being in the universe. Then you stab him in the back at the drop of a hat. Ha!
Don't you kill on your planet?
Hell yeah! We kill every day!
Why don't you like Hercurians?
I don't dislike them. I just really don't give a shit about them. They're dead to me. They spend every waking moment studying or reciting shit from their books, and their entire language is a bunch of friggin' medical code. How long were you with him?
A month?
I see. And you guys hung out? Talked? Did he ever have a beer with you, or go out and do something crazy and reckless?
No.
You see? And do you know why they don't? To prolong their miserable lives. They're in this delusion that keeping their bodies working in optimum capacity is somehow living. They prolong their lives, and by the time they finally die, all they've accomplished is living a little longer than the rest of us and parroting a bunch of bullshit.
Life should have fun in it, too. I agree with you on that. But what the Hercurians do is the most important thing anyone can do. For everyone.
Fucking Earthlings don't get it. To live is to have passion. There is no passion on Hercury at all.
I pondered this for a moment. So where does all this passion of yours come from? What the hell are you talking about, Earth Boy? Where does it come from? It's the only thing that's real. It's what makes the planets reach for the sky. Terry would have you believe that it's tiny-ass fucking equations using light for photosynthesis. Don't you get it? They think philosophy is something fun. Philosophy is idiotic, pointless, and a waste of time. What are these answers you all seek? I'll tell you. Your answer, if you ever found it, would be, "Look at me! Look what I accomplished!" Then the void stares back at you with that cold indifference and says, "Thanks. I've been meaning to have that done." And that's it. There's your life. Yippee! You lived an extra 10 years and someone thinks you're a guru. Whoop-de-doo! But what is it to you? I mean, it's different for everybody, isn't it? Of course it's different! There's no passion on the Earth, either! Ha! I've been there. In your history, maybe. But these days, it's beaten out of you before you leave your parents' house and find your little microcosmic niche in that vast and stupid corporate capitalistic spiderweb with your little weather updates, economic updates, puppet government updates. On Hercury, there aren't even any updates.
I still think about that conversation. I still have Tiri and Mel with me, arguing in my head about everything I do. Past, present, and future.